Len, here we are in the middle of September, and it seems like golf season is really heating up. We have an Illinois PGA Major Championship, the match play this week out at Elgin Country Club. And of course, here in the background of Golfers on Golf World Headquarters, we're watching the U.S. Open on the big screen, and I'm sure you've got it down at Len Zeman Golf, also is watching the developments from Wingfoot Country Club in New York.
Yeah, I've been having it on all morning. It's such a strange feeling right now, Rory. I tell you, as you know, in the past years, our season would kind of really taper off in a hurry as soon as the BMW Championship was over. You know, we'd cover a little bit after that, but that was basically it. Now, to me, it feels like we're almost starting the season. I mean, we've got the U.S. Open and the Masters is still to be played. Big LPGA events are still to be played. We do have the last of the, even on the local front, a somewhat revised version of the Players Championship by the Illinois PGA. That's still coming. So, you know, it's kind of fun to think about what all is still ahead, that golf isn't over. But, you know, fall golf is the best anyway, in my book. Always felt that way, and even more so this year, I think.
Well, fall golf, when the colors are in full bloom on the golf course, is always a wonderful time to play. The trees are always make for a great background. The only problem is if they're shedding their leaves, sometimes it makes it a little difficult to find your golf ball. You know, it seems like in some ways, as golf is heating up, we are preparing to wind down Golfers on Golf Radio for the season. Mm-hmm. This Saturday will be our final show for 2020. And we look forward to having you join us as the season, actually joining us for the whole show. But for the last 35 minutes of the season, really have a roundtable look at what's been going on this year, how the pandemic has affected things, and maybe what we will see next year. We'll have to dig into our crystal ball a little bit.
Being part of your show, I know I've been a guest here and there and a lot of previous years, but this has really been a good thing for me, a whole lot of fun to be involved and see how you radio guys really work. I tell you, it's been a lark in this. I hate to see the last radio show come to an end because there's still a lot of things that we could be talking about on that show. But time-wise, it's probably the appropriate time. But I'm looking forward to Saturday's final show, and it's going to be fun being I'll have more to say than I have usually.
Well, Len, you know, this week, as we touched on, is the U.S. Open, and I know there's going to be a lot of excitement yet at Wingfoot before the champion is crowned on Sunday night. But also, I think we need to look into our crystal ball a little bit. Next week, I was looking forward to driving back and forth a few days to Kohler, Wisconsin, and the Ryder Cup. And, of course, next week might be the best week of golf in Wisconsin all year long that didn't happen. There's plenty of things that we will touch on during the show and our discussion. Unfortunately, though, one of the big tournaments of the year that we were really looking forward to would have been next week. We'll have to wait another year for that.
You know, next week's kind of a interesting week for me, too, because I'm getting back on the road. It'll be our third golf travel destination tour of the year. We're heading to the Outer Banks of North Carolina for the key part of it, and then of course going from there to an old hangout that I love to go to, Myrtle Beach. I'm not sure all the courses that we're going to play in Myrtle yet, but Chris King is arranging at least a few days for us there. That's going to be fun. So, you know, we're still very much in the golf season, and it's going to be a fun fall. I'll tell you that. The weather is cooling off here a bit in Florida. There's a few places for sure that are still on the radar for us to visit. So between you in Illinois and me in Florida, we are going to have the golf beat covered for quite a while.
Well, I'm looking forward to a couple of weeks from now, traveling back, playing golf in Ohio for the first time in, oh, I don't know, maybe the better part of 6 or 7 years. I'm going to visit the historic Firestone Country Club, play all three of their golf courses, and Firestone Private Club has some select packages in certain times of the year, certain availability, but open to the public. Come stay in their villas and play some golf there, and I'm not sure what's all behind the special opening and allowing the public play there. Perhaps they're I'm not sure if they had a slower year due to the pandemic or they're looking to raise some capital for improvements to the facility, but an outstanding opportunity to see one of golf's great historic facilities up and close and personal for me. And let's spread the word right now. Public golfers, you're invited. You can go there too. Get in the car, get on the plane, whatever you're comfortable with this year, go see and play some great golf at Firestone Country Club that just a few weeks back hosted the Senior Players Championship won by Jerry Kelly, and he won it in dramatic fashion.
Yeah, you know, Firestone, I played Firestone many, many years ago, and it was a treat then. It was hosting, it was a key site for the PGA Tour for many, many, many years, and it was at the time that I was there. This was, as far as being a, you know, like enjoying my role here, focusing on golf travel, that decision by Firestone, I felt was huge. A place of that magnitude opening for at least limited special public play, that's an opportunity that I envy the opportunity for a lot of people to get a chance to see that place, because it is one of the historic, iconic venues in American golf. Anybody's getting it, I envy you the chance to play it now, because it's going to be a real treat, I can guarantee you.
Well, Len, what's been brought to our attention today is that there has been a tournament added to the LPGA schedule at a place that I finally have had an opportunity to visit a couple times in the last couple of years, Reynolds Lake Oconee. Not sure if it's going to be on the Great Waters course that Jack Nicklaus redid, but the LPGA is coming. They're moving a tournament that was expected to be held out in the Far East, and it'll be held over here in conjunction with Women's Golf, a place that you've had a chance to see north of Orlando. Mission Hills Inn and Resort has a Symetra Tour event added, so it's nice to see that the ladies are getting some additional tournaments to play here in the United States during the fall season.
It's amazing what can be done at the has been done at the last minute for these changes. Reynolds Lake Oconee, my understanding is that it is going to be played on the Big Waters course, and it actually, I understand it's replacing two tournaments in the Far East that, just on the basis of this year, they decided they better not hold the tournaments there. So they have this event at Reynolds Lake Oconee. But that is just a wonderful place. We've been there maybe three, four times over the years. And the Big Waters course was just redone. Jack Nicklaus, I understand it's spectacular. It was a Jack Nicklaus design originally that he that did some renovation work on, and I think that's just a great place. Now, it's interesting also that the Symetra Tour is going to play at the Mission Inn course in Howie in the Hills, Florida, which is a suburb of Orlando. It's it's an old place, but very neat. They have a course that one of the oldest courses in Florida there, El Campeón, which I'm assuming that's going to be the tournament course. I can't guarantee that. They also have a Gary Cope course there called Las Colinas. But Mission Inn is a very unique place for Florida. And it's been the site of a lot of tournaments, particularly the Florida State High School tournament has been played there many years. Many, many college tournaments are there. The Butcher family, who are originally from Chicago, are the longtime owners of that resort. So it's going to be interesting. I'm glad that they're taking on a tournament of this nature. It's something a little different for them. And we're going to do our best to make an appearance at both of those. I don't know if it'll happen, but we're going to give it a shot.
Now, you mentioned college tournaments, and I'm curious to see if the University of Illinois will host some college invitational events down in Champaign-Urbana for the men's team or the women's team or for both teams. University of Illinois announcing today that a generous donor, alumni of the school, is written a check for $5 million so that the university can get going and move forward on course improvements to the golf course that had been known as Stony Creek, and now is the Atkins course at the University of Illinois, of course, donated to the school by the Atkins family that's been very active in fighting Illini sports. The university is expected to announce shortly that architect Drew Rogers will be brought in for renovation work there. There also will be facility work done. Rogers is best known in the area for his renovation work at the Urbana country club. University of Illinois upping its game right there, almost on campus.
Yeah, you know, Drew Rogers is may not be a household name in the world of golf architecture in the Chicago area, but he is. It's interesting to note that he has had a long time as working with Arthur Hills. And Arthur Hills, you know, he's done courses all over the world. Arthur is now in his 90s, living out here in Florida. Drew Rogers has got a good background with him. I'm sure that that's going to, that course is going to really, really be nice once once the work is done on it. But right now, I think that I don't think that there'll be a University of Illinois event there for a little while. I mean, it'll be a good course for the Illini to have for their for a home course in the Champaign area. But I agree with you. I think that that's going to be a collegiate tournament site for either the men's or the women's teams or both eventually down the road.
Well, with Mike Small's Fighting Illini Invitational so popular with schools across the country, not just the U of I players, but there are colleges everywhere that are trying to get into that event who currently are not on the invitation list, wanting to get into that Olympia Fields event. I think it would be more likely that the school would likely start with a women's team event there and hosting that on campus. That's what I would guess, and I would believe that Coach Renee Sloan and her staff would probably push the university on seeing if the you know, the men have their invitational. It's time for the ladies to have theirs as well. And to showcase the Atkins facility after it gets redone would be an outstanding way to do it. Speaking of Mike Small, stunning news. Small, who's played so well at Elgin Country Club this week on the stroke play and winning his first match in the match play championship, has been stunned this morning by Mistwood Director of Golf Andy Michelson, who Small defeated at the Illinois PGA Section Championship at Medina just a couple weeks ago. Small held off charges from Michelson and also Mistwood head golf professional Frank Hohenadel. They were all paired together in the last group. Andy and Frank both took turns making a run at coach, but he came away with the title for the 13th time. But he's not going to win the match play this year. Two-time defending champ Garrett Chassard has also moved on to the quarterfinals as well. So some really good players in the Illinois PGA section are going to battle it out here at the wire for the match play major championship title.
Mike Small, it was nice that he was able to be in that tournament. He usually, you know, was held in May, and I don't know that he appeared in that tournament more than once or twice. He was never able to because he had duties with his University of Illinois team coaching. So that was an event he you know, he just couldn't participate in. You know, he did. He was awful good in the qualifying round. They did something a little different there, which I still don't quite understand it. They had a stroke play qualifying round, I thought, to determine seedings, but apparently affected other things as well. So I know that Mike's 66 was the low score, but he was strictly the second seed to Garrett Chassard, who had won the last 2 years. So now we have to just watch and see how that tournament plays out. One thing I should say about that tournament is I think that there's been talk about holding that tournament later in the year, and I think it's borne out. I think that's when it should be. It shouldn't be in May. I think that that it's worked out very well as a competitive event later in the year, and I hope whether they change sites from Kemper Lakes or don't. Kemper Lakes was the longtime site of that tournament. I think it's great to have later dates for the match play event. I think it fits it's going to fit the calendar for just the interest of the overall public a lot better in the fall than it did in May.
Speaking with some of the executive staff of the Illinois PGA when I was at Elgin Country Club for Wednesday's matches, it sounds like a return to May might be the direction they're now headed after looking at the possibility of going to September. But what can be tough on the professionals, even if it's not as busy maybe at their clubs in September as it normally might be in May, but then you're trying to put the Illinois Open, the Section Championship, the Match Play, and the Players Championship then into four majors into an eight-week window. And that's asking a lot of, you know, section professionals who don't play tournaments for a living. So it appears that the Match Play, to spread things out a little bit, might possibly remain in May, depending on what club or facility the championship's going to be held at from year to year.
Well, you're right. They may well go back to May. There's no question about that, and they probably, I'm sure they have good reason for it. An out for that, though, I think might not be under consideration. Why not wrap it up in the first? Why not play the Players Championship the first week of October, and thereby opening a little, making the lone major of September being the Match Play? You know, that'd spread them out pretty good. You'd have two big ones in August, one in September, and one in October. The weather's still good in October. The colors would be great no matter where they played it. But again, it's something that greater minds than mine got to deal with. But that would be certainly, I think, something to think about.
Something to think about is what we're going to see this week at Wingfoot. And there's been some talk in recent years that course setup has been made a little easier. We even saw some places where there was 60 and 80 yard wide fairways at Erin Hills just a couple of years ago. And now we're talking about rough that is more than ankle deep. And it sounds like the USGA was determined to sort of put things back on track where somewhere around par would be a great winning score.
That's always been the case at the U.S. Open, although, you know what, just based only on the early rounds of numbers coming in, you know, we're doing this interview during the first round of the tournament. Scores were pretty darn good for the early numbers coming in. So, you know, it's kind of early. Yeah, that tournament always gets harder as it goes on. And of course, setup is harder. Wingfoot has always been one of the tougher venues. I remember I covered the U.S. Open there in 1974 when Hale Irwin won, and that was probably the worst scoring U.S. Open of all my years covering it. I mean, it was, I think Hale was plus seven that year, you know, as the winner, as the champion. It can be a real tough track if the USGA tends to set it up that way. So we'll just have to see. You know, that I'm looking forward to the weekend rounds. There, I'm sure there's going to be some struggling, but that's a great title to win. It'll be great drama.
Even more drama was some of the interesting stories presented about club history with the U.S. Open on the Golf Channel the other night. The U.S. Open you just mentioned, which I believe was the Wingfoot Massacre when Hale Irwin won at plus seven. Right. But apparently the setup that year from the grandstands and the fan galleries, also the way that the players were playing the golf course, the divots in certain areas that really dug up the turf. Great story on the Golf Channel about how the USGA fell out of favor with the membership at Wingfoot. And Wingfoot was in no hurry to get a U.S. Open again. In fact, traffic got so bad around the club, and there wasn't adequate security and police, apparently, to route traffic. Players repeatedly had to get out of their cars, park them on the side of the road, or leave them with their family member, whoever they were driving with, and throw the bag over their shoulder and walk to get to the golf course, to get to their either tee time on time or to have some time to warm up before their round that day. And as a result, the USGA wasn't happy with the club. The club wasn't happy with the USGA. And for years, when the USGA thought about going back to Wingfoot, they said, we don't want to go. And then when they finally did want to go, amazingly enough, this would have been an interesting part of history. The USGA offered Wingfoot the 2015 U.S. Open that was ultimately played at Chambers Bay. And the club simply said, no thanks, we're not interested. That's why we ended up with Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson in the drama of the greens at Chambers Bay, only because Wingfoot said no to that. So, you know, for people who say, geez, you know, we had that the issue of the bill after the 2003 U.S. Open at Olympia Fields and so forth. And the U.S. Open really is never going to come back there because somebody got hit with some charges for security. I think if you hear the story at Wingfoot and what's going on between the USGA and the club, I think it shows that whatever happened years ago can be bygones, and any tournament can come back at some point again down the road.
Yeah, you know, that Wingfoot event is quite a good memory for me. An interesting memory. I don't know if it was a good memory. Back in that day, the Chicago papers didn't cover every big tournament. I remember the year before that was the first time the Chicago Sun-Times, which was then my employer, we'd been to the U.S. Open, and I covered it at Oakmont. I had Johnny Miller shooting 63 in the last round, so that was great scoring and all that. Then you go to Wingfoot, and it was a mess. Beyond, I was just alluding to the score when I talked about Hale Irwin, but I can remember in the final round, I can't remember a course where this could ever happen before, but John Schlee, who was next to the last group, on the final round, he hit his first ball out of bounds. First ball of the whole final round out of bounds. It was a crazy scene. The whole thing was a crazy scene, but it was all, for us at that time, it was all a lead-in to the U.S. Open coming to Medina in 1975. You know, you look back on how much golf has changed from how many, that's a lot of years ago. It's funny that the high scores and the nightmare of Wingfoot is what you come away from there. But, you know, it was the second of Hale Irwin's three U.S. Open victories, and he would get his third at Medina all the way from, took till 1990 to get it. But great place in golf history. Wingfoot is a great place in golf history, not always for good reasons, but a very historic club.
Well, it took a very successful 1997 PGA Championship won by Davis Love III at Wingfoot to show that the club was ready to get back to handling majors. And I think after that, they saw that there was no problems, the traffic situation had been cleared up, other issues had been resolved. I think it was then when the USGA started to consider going back there again. Gil Hanse has come in since a few years back and has renovated the golf course. Several of the holes that played a certain length for the U.S. Open we've talked about with Hale Irwin and the 1997 PGA have been lengthened, and the place is a little longer, a little tougher, the rough's a little deeper. You have to wonder what the USGA might have seen at Olympia Fields just a few weeks ago at the BMW Championship and what that did to scores, to players that week. Well, we didn't see anybody winning at Olympia Fields at 30 under par like Dustin Johnson had done the week before up in Boston. Len, we're about out of time here, ready to putt out on 18. Any final thoughts before we call it quits for the week?
Tell you, I say this all the time, but I've said it in our previous shows. It seems so funny that we seem to be wrapping up big events here later in the year like we usually have done. But there's so much good golf ahead that, you know, it'll be good conversation fodder for our next time around. I'm sure whatever comes out of Wingfoot will be now a way of looking ahead to the Masters in Augusta in November. That's the way to look at it. We've gone through a weird year, but, you know, we're getting through it. And golf certainly has hung right in there. The whole sport, the big tournaments, the golf organizations. And it's in a way, and as far as golf goes, it's been a very positive year. So looking forward to the next big one, once Wingfoot's over.
Well, and my final thoughts for the week, there are still some available tee times up in Kohler, and I'm not sure if Whistling Straits has any availability, but of course that course was set up to be in prime condition for next week. What was supposed to be Ryder Cup week, and your average public golfer and resort guest is going to get a chance to play there next week, the week it was ready for a major golf event. Also, you and I have touched on equipment releases and Titleist this past week getting some new product out. Their brand new TSI drivers got put in the hands of their staff players last week. Some of their players are going to debut them this week at the U.S. Open. It's amazing to see players at a major championship putting new clubs in their bag major championship week, but they're going to do it. That's how good they say this driver is. Justin Thomas inspired a new Scotty Cameron putter. They're going to make 2020 of them, 2020. Len, you could get one for only $850 for your new Scotty Cameron putter. And final thought from the Evans Scholars Invitational. The winner, Curtis Thompson, better known maybe for being Lexi Thompson's brother and Lexi Thompson's former caddy, getting his first win on the Corn Ferry Tour. He took a break from golf to caddy for his sister for a while and has returned to the game and now feels confident that he belongs back out on tour. Who knows? Maybe we'll see more of a future for him in professional golf other than just being known as Lexi's brother or Lexi's caddy. With that, Len, we'll call it a week, and we look forward to talking to you on the season finale, Golfers on Golf Radio, this Saturday morning.